for an actor, theater tech rehearsals are fantastic. They're like being on a film set. It's just a lot of hurry up and wait. But for a production manager, a production coordinator at a major, major Tony Award-winning American regional theater, it's tax season. The most wonderful time of the year. Am I right, Phil Rundle?
No, they're pretty long and boring.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 362, Design for Comedy. Phil Rundle is not only the production manager here at Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park, he also designed the set for our world premiere production of The Complete History of Comedy Abridged. Just before our very first preview performance last night, which was sold out, a very good sign, I convinced Phil to sit down and talk with me about the complexities of managing the many productions here at the Playhouse, but also what our reduced design process was like. In addition to being the production manager here at Cincinnati Playhouse at the Park, you also are the designer of record, at least, for the world premiere of The Complete History of Comedy Abridged. How did that happen? Did you draw the short straw? How did that work?
Well, it was pretty much a short straw sort of thing. Normally, I don't design scenery, and we use actual professional set designers. Mm-hmm. But also, normally, having worked with you guys on any number of past productions, your requirements are fairly basic, if not to say outright degrading. But and so I thought, well, we're not going to—I didn't bring a designer in to do, a flag in the middle of the stage or, right. something.
We're not reinventing the wheel here.
Something fairly simple and straightforward. Mm-hmm. This one, of course, then turned out to be, the sort of Broadway version of the show or something. It's a much more complicated approach than you guys normally take.
But it is true. It is a much more complicated. We've added slides, visual component, and we've added this a surgery scene in which we pull things out of one of the actors while he's lying in a bed. So we've had to create that bed.
Right, and the logistics that involved behind all of those things really meant that the show really did need a real set design. So yeah. I sort of dusted off some very old, very dusty skills here, and came up with something that I hope actually supports the show well and is in the right vein, fits the spirit of the piece.
Definitely. Well, and I think Reed and I said it in our very first conversation with you. We so rarely get a genuine design process when we're designing our new shows. And it's usually Reed and I going, well, what would be good, right. And if the design decisions are left up to us, that's not our bailiwick either. So it's been great to have your eye and your taste, because you read the script and you looked at it. I know, because Reed and I never
did
do.
Read the script.
Yeah, and you still wanted to work on it.
Right. Well, that might be putting a little stronger.
But you were still paid to work on
yes,
it.
Yes. Yes.
But you picked out some themes and some things in the script that seemed important, and I'm not sure we were conscious of it so much. But even just you using a brick wall at the back, mm-hmm. gives it this kind of stand-up comedy from the 80s feel.
Right, yeah. There were some elements in there that sort of struck me as being the classic. It is the history of comedy. And so, and going through the Commedia references, this classic stand-up stuff, the Greek and Roman elements. I mean, there were all these kind of elements, and so it seemed that what was appropriate was to represent those in the things that that kind of evoked that.
Yeah.
And then there was the timeline.
Well, yes, and I wanted to get to the timeline because I love it when a theater can be transformed, not just the playing space, mm-hmm. but the entire surround that the audience is a part of. And, usually I say that and people go, well, we don't have the time, money, interest, blah. But you kind of leapt at this idea of creating a timeline of the comedy that surrounds the audience.
Right. And it became a sort of... it became a sort of all-consuming project in a way. It's, in fact, it's still going on.
Yes, we don't open for a week, so we've got some time.
but it is it sort of grew up out of a conversation about the word Austin had said, oh, it's so wonderful to be able to transform the space, and this happens to be our smaller space, so it is actually possible to consider such a process.
That's true.
Out of that conversation came the idea of this timeline, the history, a sort of physical, evocation of the history of comedy and the timeline. And so we sort of set to work on it. And my original idea was to do sort of one timeline and represent it three times around the theater, one for each section of the theater. The theater has three distinct seating sections.
Yes, it's a true thrust. In one sense, there's not a good seat in the house. On the other hand, there's not a bad seat in the house because everybody's very close to the action.
Right, yeah, so it's a relatively small space. But when Austin and Reed got here, they sat in the space and go, it would be wonderful if it just continued all the way around.
Yeah.
And actually looking at it, it was like, yes, that is a great idea. It's it would be very interesting to do that. So we've had a very good time, doing. It's an abridged history.
Yes, as is everything we do.
Right, yeah. And it attempts to, it is serious when you look at it, sort of. But there's a lot of sort of jokes hidden in the visuals. Austin Reed came up with a lot of material about the various elements that were going to be on the the important points in time, and then I was attempting to pair visuals with them, and then do things to kind of keep it fun and sort of juxtapose modern day images, with things purporting to be in the past, and put Planet of the Apes back at the caveman section and things like. I mean, it's just sort of silly things like that.
Well, and we clearly share a lot of pop culture influences.
Right. Yes. Yeah. It's a very while it is a timeline, it also intends to entertain anybody who cares to look at it.
Well, and we wrote some jokes for the more ancient periods, but we realized that coming up to the contemporary periods. We weren't writing as many jokes. We went, just show a picture of young Frankenstein and the monster tap dancing in Tales. That's funny, right there.
Yeah, it is. And just it's as we're working on the current period, there aren't really very many jokes in there because you have to, what kind of a joke do you put on Seinfeld? I mean, it's just funny to look at.
Yeah, so. Just Mad Magazine. Oh, right. Alfred E. Newman. That just evokes right there for so many things. Well, the thing I was also loved about the timeline idea was that it picks up on not only a thematic but a kind of a structural thing that Reed and I were talking about when we sat to write the history of comedy. One of the structural notions was, well, what if we actually write the comedy of history? What if we actually look at historical events and see why they were important but for different comic reasons than we think? Turned out that was harder than we wanted to do, and it was against where we ended up going. But this timeline is kind of a way of doing that.
Yes, it kind of, because you can find the funny things in history, and there are a lot of them. I mean, things that were either vintage jokes in a way, or things that were just flat out, in retrospect, damned funny.
Yes. Well, and I think that's the thing we always find, jokes, stage-worthy jokes are their own breed. Mm-hmm. But then there are, and I think we found out that in writing the comedy of history, those tended to be one-liners and written sorts of jokes, more suited for a timeline than a stage performance.
And probably require a lot of historical context to get the funny out
yes.
of it. Yes,
exactly right.
Right. So they don't necessarily stand on their own. But when you compare a visual with it, then I think it helps to do that. You can automatically see, that there's a, here's this purportedly serious image, but when you put a caption on it, it becomes very funny.
Well, and I think this timeline can be, we can continue to utilize the stuff we've come up with in the timeline, just in program information or program notes. It could be printed one day,
Right. Yeah, it could. It might be entertaining on its own.
Hi, I'm Jessica Brown with Fox 19.
I'm Dan Wells with Fox 19 News, and you're listening to the Reduce Shakespeare podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? We have 6 performances left of our UK tour of the complete works of William Shakespeare, Abridged, Revised. But then we'll return in the first week of December to the Park Theatre in Finsbury, London, for 6 or 7 more performances there. We open the complete history of comedy Abridged this week at Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park, and we'll be performing it here until December 29th. And next month, we'll also perform the ultimate Christmas show Abridged in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Galesburg, Illinois, and Reston, Virginia. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information.
As the designer for the complete history of comedy, but also as production coordinator for Cincinnati Playhouse, it seems like much of your job is, am I right, putting out fires, solving, finding solutions?
Ironically, what we just had fire extinguisher training the last couple of days. I skipped it this year, figuring that I put out fires every damn day, so there's not really a need for me to go practice much more. But there's a lot of that. It's kind of half putting out the current fires and half trying to figure out what the fires next season are going to be.
I mean, you were saying earlier today. I mean, today is the very first paid preview for the complete history of Comedy Abridged, and you went off to a meeting about the next season, 2014-2015 season.
Right. Yeah. So the season that won't put the first show of which won't appear on stage until Labor Day next year. But we have to start putting that together, going through the budgeting process and the scheduling process, and trying to assemble the various components of that starting now. You know, a good 10 months out.
Yeah.
And even at that, sometimes we feel we're late getting to it. So,
well, and you've got spaces here. The Marks Theater, where we did the very first workshop performances of all the great books Abridged in the summer of 2002. And then the Shelter House, where we have performed every other time, which is a 225-seat thrust theater. Those are the two theaters, but right now you've got 3 shows going on, right? There's us, the final week of Cabaret, and Christmas Carol rehearsals just began today.
Right, yeah, down in the rehearsal hall, Christmas Carol's running, and we just closed a small, we have a tour that goes out to schools as well, a little theater for young audiences sort of thing. So yes, we always have, we have, I don't know, I can't even remember how many 100 performances a year that we do, and at any given point we have 4 or 5 shows in some stage of production, because even though we've got Christmas Carol starting rehearsal, and that will go into the big theater next week, Cabaret's running, we're about to preview the history of comedy, the shops are working on an upcoming production of Clybourne Park. And what else do we have in the shop? 4,000 Miles is starting to ramp up in there. And then we're in preliminary designs for stuff down the road as well. So there's a lot of, it's busy.
Yeah, it is, which is why you're here on a Saturday night, finishing the 20th century part of the complete timeline of comedy,
exactly.
Abridged.
Yeah.
How did you said you were dust, you dusted off a lot of old design skills. Did you begin in design? Did you begin in project management?
No. I've always been in production. I've done a handful of design projects over the years, usually either because I don't know, just for an odd sort of reasons. Never really pursued being a designer, didn't really want to be a designer. I like doing production stuff. I was a technical director for many years.
Okay.
Production
managers are sort of grown-up technical directors. Is that fair?
At times, sometimes they're grown-up stage managers,
yes,
although stage managers tend not to grow up, so more of them, I think, are production managers.
You don't imagine what they say about actors.
Exactly. They never become production managers.
No.
Yes, a lot come out of technical backgrounds because you're managing a lot of technical infrastructure, so it helps to have an understanding of all of that. So when somebody erupts, when a fire erupts, you can actually participate in some useful way in trying to extinguish it.
Yeah. Well, do you walk around this place and just, you know, when everything's humming and just go, just breathe a big sigh of relief, like, this is great?
That would be when everything's humming.
Oh, does it not? It never hums? We don't hum here?
We get a few minutes at a time, yes. No. Well, things hum along, but there's always, it's a funny business that we're in a lot of ways, because it is, as much as you try to plan, I joke that, you know, we're starting to budget next season. I'm going to dust off my magic eight ball and my dartboard. you know, we have to try to put numbers and, you know, estimate what it's going to cost to produce shows that we, some of them, which has sort of have scripts, you know, many of which are new. They're going to change a lot.
Right.
We don't have creative teams associated with it. We don't really know what the projects are, and yet we have to put numbers on them.
Wow.
And you know, whatever number you put on it, it's going to be different. Mm-hmm. That you know, you might as well, they're not quite random, but you might as well just sort of, you know, so you sort of average it out and sort of say, how much money do we think we should spend on this project? And then everything after that is trying to contain the project within this sort of frame that you already drew, or right. trying to figure out ways to get, you know, to change things around. And so there's a lot of juggling. You know, one project will, you'll end up, oh, we budgeted a huge video thing. Oh, we're not using video. Well, hey, you know, okay. there's, you know, 20 grand. Okay. But then the next
good, because we went 20 grand over on something else.
Exactly. Yeah. But then the next project wants, you know, they decided they needed spacesuits. I don't know, you know. And so it's a constant sort of juggle. The challenge is you can't force the projects to adhere strictly to some early conception you may have had of what the thing is, because it's not the natural, it's just not the natural process associated with creating a successful performance on stage. It has to be allowed to develop in rehearsal. It has to be allowed to change, to take advantage of things that come up, and to you know, delete things that aren't working. I mean, and so it tends to be, we do all this planning, we do all this, you know, pre-construction, all, we do all this stuff, and then the show starts rehearsal and everything starts changing. And it can drive you crazy, but you have to kind of embrace it, because if you don't, you're trying to force a round peg into a square hole. And you're never going to really be successful doing that. You just create a lot of agony. And but the trick is, you have to do that within a framework that allows the business and the institution to survive and do it again.
Right.
So it's just nothing but it's a juggling act, really, you know. And when it works, it looks good, and when it doesn't, you know, balls are raining down everywhere, you know.
Well, and in a lot of ways too. I mean, that seems to echo the themes of The Complete History of Comedy Abridged, which is mm-hmm. which is It's both a leap of faith, mm-hmm. you know, in the sense that you know, comedy is our religion and the theater is our temple. You know, you have to have both faith,
yes.
and a sense in the numbers, and a faith in that the numbers will even out, and that combination is what makes it work.
Right. That's exactly. I mean, it's sort of in that respect. I mean, your show is not really much different than every other. Every show is a leap of faith in some respect,
right.
And every time you go to do a production, there's a leap of faith that this is going to work, you know, that somehow whatever comes up, we're going to figure out a way to make that work, and we're going to, you know, and in the end, it'll all come out right, even though it seems like it's impossible. Believe it or not, it will come out right, and somehow it does. I don't know, it's crazy.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. As I said, we had our very first preview performance last night, and the audience was loud and boisterous, and according to the positive comments we heard in the lobby after the show, the buzz is strong with this one. Send us your design process via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel, or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, production uncoordinator Matthew Croke, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Morgan Hamilton. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Dan Wells and Jessica Brown from Fox 19 in Cincinnati. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 362/186 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Now I have to go find that quote from Jeffrey Rush. How does it turn out? I don't know. It always does. It's a mystery.
Exactly. It is a mystery. I always look at my numbers at the end of the year and think, how the hell did that happen?
I'm a genius.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
And so much less.